The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We're waiting for Donald Trump to speak sometime within the next hour.
We're waiting now for Donald Trump to hold his first town hall meeting.
As we're waiting for Donald Trump to come to the stage.
So a reminder that we're waiting for Donald Trump.
So once again, we're waiting for Donald Trump.
We are waiting on this Trump rally.
We're waiting right now for Donald Trump at that rally.
You're looking at live pictures over there, much more coming up.
We're watching and waiting for Donald Trump there.
To the Trump event on Kiawa Island that will start any minute.
We're waiting for the start of a Donald Trump campaign rally.
Hey, John, we are waiting for Donald Trump to take the stage behind me.
And we're waiting for Donald Trump to come out.
Also, we're waiting for Donald Trump to show up.
We're waiting for Donald Trump to begin a rally in Bloomington, Illinois.
We're waiting right now for Donald Trump to take the stage at a campaign rally in Wilkesboro, Pennsylvania.
Waiting for Donald Trump. He's over half an hour late, but that's pretty much the norm with him.
We're waiting for Donald Trump to emerge from this meeting.
We're going
to
wait, or we're going to bring you that when it happens.
When Trump takes the stage, we will bring you his remarks live. Don't you think every Republican is going to kind of like that? Just go and stay away, you crybaby.
Yeah, well, he's about to make it to the stage. All right, let's listen in. Donald Trump taking the microphone.
And so the reality show will continue for many more months. At least it looks that way. It's not, I guess, totally official just yet, but with the results from Indiana last night, it looks like Donald Trump will be the nominee for the Republican Party, squaring off against Hillary Clinton. That little montage there, by the way, was put together by Washington Free Beacon, poking some fun at the media. The media's love affair this time around with Donald Trump. The media has its hero, the radical leftist media, of course, thinks Donald Trump is the perfect candidate to go down in flames to Hillary Clinton. And for the not quite as radical, but still godless media that's more to the center, they're convinced that Donald Trump's populist message can make America great again. And in just looking at some of the coverage, not unlike the way it was in 2008, and 2012. I mean, when the media gets its guy in there, does it work out great for America? We have some recent history that we can look back on. It makes me think of those sections in my father's booklet, the Winston Churchill booklet, The Watchman, and just how off, just how far off the British media was from the truth and from reality in the lead up to World War II. Well, in a few months, we'll be able to look back on everything that everyone was saying right now in the last few weeks and the weeks ahead. And America will learn, and probably very quickly, that it's not going to get better. Not in the short run, anyway. We're in the midst of a very dark time for the United States. And as Dennis Prager wrote in his latest column, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are two reasons of many, unfortunately, why, other than the first years of the Civil War, when the survival of the United States as a country was in jeopardy, there has never been a darker time in American history. That's quite a statement. He's had some pretty strong columns of late. You have to give him credit. But aside from those first few years of the Civil War, there's never been a darker time. Going back as far as the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, or the last years of the Civil War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, what's happened in Iraq, Afghanistan, And not just the wars, but time periods like the Great Depression. In his view, there's never been a darker time in American history. And he says here, to back that statement up with proof, he says, at no other time has there been as much pessimism. He's talking about today, valid pessimism about America's future as there is today. And he lists off the reasons. Every distinctive value on which America was founded is in jeopardy. I mean, can you argue with that? America's values? How much do you think the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, how much do you think that will be discussed in the forthcoming debates between Clinton and Trump? Prager says, according to the Pew Research Center study, more and more young Americans do not believe in freedom of speech for what they deem hate speech. 40% of respondents ages 18 to 34 agreed that offensive statements should be outlawed. You've heard all about what's happening on the campuses in the United States today. The microaggressions, the hypersensitivity, and a growing number of young American students who believe that there shouldn't be free speech, that it should be curtailed. He says, according to a series of Harvard University polls, about 47% of Americans ages 18 to 29 believe that food, shelter, and health care are a right that government should provide to those unable to afford them. They're believers, strong believers. 47% in the nanny state. Is that what the founding fathers wanted? Is that what the founding fathers set out to create? A massive, supersized federal government that would take care of the disadvantaged? That would provide all kinds of handouts for the poor? Is that the way it was in early America? Prager says, that means that nearly half our young people believe they have a legitimate claim on the labor and earnings of others for life's basic necessities. He says more than half of 18 to 29-year-old Americans do not support capitalism. Notice the age brackets here. This is the oncoming generation. This is the generation entering into its prime. Its prime work years, its prime career years. 18 to 29, 18 to 34. And more than half of young adults in America do not support capitalism, the source of the prosperity they enjoy. And the only economic system that has ever lifted mass numbers of people out of poverty. More than half. They prefer a system, one would suppose, like what's in Cuba. It says, when young Americans see pictures of the founding fathers, they do not see the great men that most Americans have seen throughout American history. They see white males who were affluent, now derisively labeled privileged, and who own slaves. That's all they see. They don't see the founders as the great men who founded the nation. It says the belief that certain fundamental rights are God-based, a view held by every American founder and nearly all Americans throughout its history, is reviled outside of conservative religious circles and held by fewer and fewer Americans today. Well, we talked about this was actually from a Prager column recently as well, where he pointed out how secular even many of the conservative commentators are. There's just it's a circle that's getting smaller and smaller. Just a small circle of conservative religious people who even believe that the fundamental rights of Americans are God-based, are God-based, are rooted in the Bible. Most don't think that way anymore. Most don't believe it. It says the view that male and female are distinctive identities, one of the few unquestioned foundational views of every society in history, is being obliterated. You heard there at the top of the hour with the headlines. What's going on in America's schools? As schools are fighting for the rights of transgenders, of those who feel like they should be a boy or a girl, even when they're not. Simply saying that one believes a child does best starting out life with a married father and mother will ensure they'll be considered a hater. That's right, standing up for what used to be just basic common sense traditions. You stand up for that today and you're going to be singled out as a hater. The idea is that America should be a melting pot, or that all Americans should identify as American, are now unutterable in educated company. In fact, many college campuses do not have an American flag on their campus because some students regard it as offensive and representational of imperialism and capitalism. That's the state of the American university today. It's hard to find a U.S. flag, because too many find it offensive in the world of academia. And so what does the future hold? Given what young people, most young people today, how they're being educated, what they think, their views on capitalism, on the founding fathers, on the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, Prager says here, in addition, virtually every major institution is in decay or disarray. Religious institutions, which for most of American history have been the most important institutions in everyday American life, are being rendered irrelevant. And a larger number of Americans, many more than ever before, do not identify with any religion. The traditional family has become nothing more than one of many options open to Americans. For the first time in American history, there are more unmarried women. There are more unmarried women than married women. It says the number of adults age 34 and under who have never been married is nearing 50%. Well, it goes on to give more marriage statistics and the rate of births to unmarried women. The breakdown of the family, in other words. Total breakdown. Just like we discussed last week. Giving you all those statements from Missing Dimension in Sex, what Mr. Armstrong said, where this is leading. All of these problems, and yet the media has its hero. Ratings are sky high. Never mind truth, or principle, or foundational law, or the Constitution. Just give us the ratings. Is the media right this time around? Will either of the two remaining candidates make America great again? Well, I think you know the answers to those questions. But why aren't more media outlets giving us the truth? All of the things in this column here, I can't recall them, at least not in any length, being discussed in many of the debates that just got such sky-high ratings. Are Americans concerned? Clearly, the media outlets are not. About the state of the family, about what's happening in higher education. about just the growing sense of pessimism and negativity. It says further, the traditional family has become nothing more than one of many options. Well, I think I read that just a bit ago. Further down, universities outside the natural sciences and mathematics are intellectual frauds in terms of ability to think clearly. They actually make most students dumber than before they entered college. National, state, and city governments have no doubt largely engaged in Ponzi scheme-like practices, racking up levels of debt that will crush the economy of the country sooner or later. That's the state of economy. Not just with the federal government, but as he brings out, state governments, city governments. And then, of course, the federal government is worst of all. When you talk about Ponzi schemes, the size of the federal government and its far-reaching meddling and the control over Americans' lives is the very thing America was founded to avoid. It's just basic history. Just basic history. When we get into the next segment, talking about some of the craziness going on here in the UK. Again, you have to search far and wide just to find a commentator that gives you the basic factual history. So many people forget, even when it's just from 10, 15, 20 years ago, or from World War II. In the case of this Neil Ferguson quote that I'll get to, as I say, in the next segment. But this is basic. The very thing America was founded to avoid. Imagine that. It says the arts are as fraudulent as academia. Artistic standards have been destroyed in music, art, and architecture. Nonsense and ugliness have replaced the pursuit of meaning, edification, and beauty. Is that not true? You know what we've been going through in recent programs. That New York Post story from a few weeks ago about how low television is willing to go to attract viewers. I mean, on primetime programming, these are the non-news shows. They're attempting to outshock their audiences week in and week out. How much lower will they go? And then you switch it over to the news programs, and they have their hero. They have their man. They have a clear idea of these two. One of them, well, depending upon your ideological view, one of them is going to make America great again. Or greater, I guess. For those in the media that think these past 8 years have just been fantastic, how much lower will it go? Fighting for transgender rights in America's schools, of all places. This morning in class, I read Genesis 6 and verse 5, where it says, when God saw the wickedness of man and how great it was in the earth, it says there that every imagination of the thoughts of man's heart was on only evil. Only evil. Now, the significance of that verse, Genesis 6 and verse 5, is that there are prophecies. Isaiah 3:9. We'll look at Isaiah here in just a second. In fact, if you want to get your Bible now, read along with me from Isaiah chapter 3. But verse 9 talks about the show of our countenance witnessing against us. And then, of course, Jesus himself in the Gospels said that it would be just like the days of Noah, the days that led up to the flood, in these latter days. Artistic standards destroyed, Prager says, in music, art, and architecture. Nonsense and ugliness have replaced the pursuit of meaning, edification, and beauty. And then finally, he concludes, and now there's Clinton and Trump. Nothing more exemplifies the dark time in which we are living. It's just a natural extension these two, a natural extension of all these problems we're seeing that are multiplying. Yesterday in one of our trumpet meetings, we were talking about the United States and Britain in prophecy, Mr. Armstrong's wonderful work, a book that went to more than 6 million households worldwide in the 20th century. And we're working to produce videos, trying to put that message to video to get it out there to a larger audience. And in the course of the discussion, we were talking about how the book begins. The very first page where Mr. Armstrong says a staggering turn in world events is due to erupt in the next few years. Well, if that doesn't get your attention, what would? That's the first line of the United States and Britain in prophecy. And he went on to talk about how it's going to violently involve the United States and Britain. That's true. He said it's already too late for the free world to wake up to the real meaning behind what's happening. And then Mr. Armstrong asked this, why do not the world's leaders see what's coming? Why are the world's best minds unseeing, the heads of state, scientists, educators, editors, news analysts, bankers, industrialists, leaders in business and commerce? They're totally unaware. Why? Why don't they know? Why don't they have answers? Why aren't they telling us about the staggering turn of events? That's what we're living through right now. We're seeing it. Mr. Armstrong wrote of it. I think the last version of that book was printed in 1981. Of course, we now print it. We own it. No other church can say that. We fought for it in court. And God intervened so that we could possess that work, so that we could own it, so that we could make it available to you, so we could make it available to your children, so we could distribute it to viewers of the Key of David. A staggering turn. We're living right in the midst of it. This staggering turn of world events, it's happening. It's happening in our nations. Here in the book of Isaiah, this is chapter 3. Notice what Isaiah prophesied to happen in our day. And again, verse 9, it talks about the show of our countenance, the sins that we proudly put on display. I mean, we want to see them spread, you see. We've got to impose some strong correction on North Carolina and Mississippi for their so-called discriminatory laws that would say, in the case of North Carolina, if you're a biological man, use the men's restroom. That's extreme. That's an extreme view for many of the best minds of the United States, the heads of state, the scientists, the educators, the editors, the news analysts. North Carolina and Mississippi, they better get in line here, because this is the new America. Look at how fast prophetic events have been moving. Seriously, as we discussed also yesterday in the meeting. I mean, we're at a point where you could turn on the news and not really be shocked by anything. Given what we know about Bible prophecy, as much as God describes for us in such vivid detail as we went through in class this morning, and when you see just how fast it's moving, well, really nothing should surprise us. Considering what Jesus said about our days, Sodom and Gomorrah, the days leading up to the flood, I mean, the minds of men were on evil continually right before the flood. And what action did God take? Well, here in Isaiah 3, note this, it says, "For behold, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water." Curses. Food and water, when that starts to disappear, well, you're talking about total disaster, a total breakdown of society. And along with those blessings that God takes away. Look at what it says in verses 2 and 3. "The mighty man, the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient and the captain of 50 and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer and the eloquent orator." We're talking about the death of true leadership. And it says here that God's taking them away. And verse 4 says, "I'll give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." We're so childish, spiritually speaking. We're so childish that we don't even see this prophecy being fulfilled. We don't see it as a curse from God. We think there's strong leadership that can still deliver us to the promised land, that can, on the one side, make America great again, or on the other side, continue on with all of these liberal leftist policies to take us to socialism. God's taken away the leaders, and this is a curse. A great nation can't survive without strong leadership. Down in verse 12, it says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths." So much of this does just boil down to the leadership. But it's more than the leaders, as we've said so many times before. It's the people, and that was laid out pretty convincingly in Dennis Prager's column. It's the people. It's what America wants. It's what we're the majority, you hear. You heard it in 2008. You hear it again this year. We're the majority. We've got the most votes. We get what we want. Well, that's true. Be careful what you wish for, as the saying goes. Leviticus, let's look at this. Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 17. It says here, you know this passage well if you've followed our program or if you've read the United States and Britain in prophecy. Leviticus 26, 17 says, "And I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies, that they hate you. They that hate you, sorry, shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursues. And if you will not yet for all this hearken to me, I will punish you seven times more for your sins." I mean, this chapter, together with Deuteronomy 28, sorry, they outline the blessings and the cursings that come as a result of either obedience or disobedience. Verse 19, "I'll break the pride of your power, and I'll make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass." And so because of these prophecies, because of the United States and Britain in prophecy, well, you before this work, you've been able to tune in to Herbert Armstrong, or now in these past 26 years, you've been able to tune into the Key of David, or now KPCG, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary tomorrow. And you've been able to get the straight scoop. You've been able to hear the truth. And we've said things along the way. Right at the outset of the war against terrorism, as it was called in 2001. Well, the intentions might be good. The U.S. wants to eliminate the terrorism. It's taking a much more aggressive posture, but how will this end? How is this going to work out in the end? Not good, because America doesn't have the necessary will to really tackle the problem. I'll break the pride of your power, God says. And your strength, verse 20, shall be spent in vain. For your land shall not yield her increase, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruits. Strength spent in vain. That's what God prophesies. And we've talked about that verse so often. I'm just looking in my stack here. There's a pretty good article that was in the, I believe, the Dallas Morning News, not that long ago, a week or two ago, just talking about, well, things that we've discussed on this program before. Why America's all-volunteer force fails to win wars. What is the problem? That was the title. What's the problem? It says here, a conundrum. Today's American soldier is, by common consent, the world's finest and even history's finest, but the United States doesn't win its wars. Time and again, the mission, the overall aim of the exercise goes unaccomplished, while the war itself continues as if on autopilot. Why? Yes, why? At least this particular author asked the question. But what is the problem here? Here is the world's finest military force. The finest this earth has ever seen, perhaps. And yet time and time again, the mission goes unaccomplished. Why is that? Well, it gets back to Leviticus 26. It gets back to Deuteronomy 28. It gets back to, it always gets back to what God says. That's what Mr. Armstrong starts out with in the United States and Britain in prophecy. A staggering turn in world events is about to happen in the next few years. And then he goes on in the following pages to talk about the sure word of Bible prophecy. To talk about how that you can count on God. You know God will back up his word. God is a being of his word. He keeps his word. This is how we've been able to know all of these years, how Mr. Armstrong was able to know about this staggering turn. I tell you, you look at the way the media, at least in the States, it's the same in Britain. But you look at the way it behaves when it gets whipped up into a frenzy like in 2008 and like it has in this election cycle. And it's frightening. You sigh and cry for your people. Because you know they're not getting the truth. Well, that's what makes this work so important. Even with the small audience size that it has to this point. Because it really and truly is a lone voice. It's a lone voice. Who else was telling you? Even before the last part of 2001. About the broken will, about the strength being spent in vain. I can remember Ron Fraser. Joel Hilliker had a couple of strong articles too, but Mr. Fraser, before he died, this is again back to 2001, he talked about the U.S. and Britain entering an unwinnable war. An unwinnable war. We wrote it in 2001, right at the time when the U.S.-led effort was, well, it was a pretty It was a pretty aggressive action. What about this statement? November 2001, Ron Fraser, a protracted, debilitating war that will gnaw at the vitals of declining Anglo-American influence in this world, leaving them most vulnerable to the whim of the emerging three great power blocks that will seize the opportunity to divide control of the global system among themselves. That's what the staggering turn is really all about. That as the United States and Britain decline, there are these three great power blocks that rush to fill the vacuum. Mr. Armstrong in U.S. and Britain, he talked about the sun setting on the British Empire, and then he asked his readers, do you think that this can't happen to the United States? He said, you need to open your eyes to the fact that Britain's sun already is set. I mean, who would have thought that could have happened? Going back 150 years, let's say. The great British Empire, I mean, it encircled the earth. The sun never set on that empire. The greatest empire the world has ever seen. And now it's just been whittled down to little England. And you'd be shocked. You'd be shocked to learn of the platforms that some British politicians are now speaking from. These are their policy positions, and they're very anti-British. We'll get into that in the next segment. We need to open our eyes to what's happening. The sun's already set on Britain. And Mr. Armstrong said the United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation. It's happening so fast. And as Mr. Armstrong says, the handwriting's on the wall. You should be able to see it. If our eyes are open to what's happening, we should be able to see it. From here on out, what's going to happen in the next few weeks or months? In the next few years, how many more election cycles will there be in the United States before the return of Jesus Christ? Well, that's part of this story as well. That's part of this warning message as well. That's part of this program as well. That's the focal point of God's plan of redemption for mankind. The return of Jesus Christ to this earth. As I was telling my students this morning, I mean, when the disciples, when they got Jesus alone there in Matthew 24, they said, hey, tell us, when will the end be? You should read that chapter. Christ went into a lot of detail. This is what's going to play out. It's going to culminate in great tribulation. And so you better watch and pray always. Watch world events. And make sure that at Christ's return, you're found doing, that you're a doer of the word and not a hearer only. Prophecy is really accelerating. And it's going to get faster. I mean, the pace is only going to accelerate further from here on out. Yes, indeed, the sun has already set on the British Empire, and it's now setting on American dominance as well. And when these nations fall, as Joel Hilliker wrote for The Trumpet about a year ago, when these nations fall, the world will plunge back into the blackness of barbarism and savagery. That's what God prophesies. And look, that's the lesson of history. That's the lesson of history. When these ascendant power blocks see how weak and sick Israel is, the descendants of Israel, this is what will happen. Barbarism and savagery. Switching back to the United States and Britain in prophecy, Herbert Armstrong wrote, "How great, how powerful, and how wealthy did the British and American people become, and what is suddenly happening to us now? Why has Britain already lost most of her colonies, her possessions, her resources, wealth, power, and influence in the world? Why is Britain no longer considered Great Britain, a great world power? Why is the United States now discredited, despised, hated throughout much of the world? Yes, why?" These are all important questions that you've got to demand answers to. God will give them to you. He says, "God warns us through prophecy that our sins are fast increasing, and now the day of reckoning is here. The foreign sword always has attacked us." That has been the history, going back even to the days of ancient Israel. That's the danger, ultimately, that we're facing. And as I've said a couple of times already, you're only going to get the truth here, from this church, this work. Certainly not from the media circus that currently surrounds the U.S. presidential campaign of 2016. You're not going to get the truth there. But there is hope, as I said a moment ago. And you can see it even in the doom and gloom of Matthew 24. You can see the hope. It's right there in the middle of the chapter. Let me just conclude this segment with that. This is Matthew 24. And right in the middle, I read this in class this morning. Let me see if I can find the verse quickly. Well, verses 21 and 22 talk about great tribulation. And then if you skip down a little bit further, it says in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and glory. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. And the live stream is available at thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails in anticipation of our one-year anniversary, which is tomorrow. Tell us what you've been doing this past year and how KPCG has impacted your life, your family, your household. Tell us what you think about this program. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
There's not a problem, perhaps, with some of the company that you keep. The Guido Fawkes blog yesterday reporting you're following Majid Freeman, who's from Leicester, who posts links to ISIS propaganda videos and films.
I'm afraid I don't check everyone that I follow, but I'll check this gentleman
you also follow Hamza Ahsan, who's campaigning on Twitter for his brother Talar. He's admitted providing material for insurgents in Afghanistan.
Well, I will check these two followers, Nick, to make sure that if they are inappropriate, I won't follow
Last
them.
Last month, the Evening Standard reported that your former brother-in-law, Makhbul Javed, had called for a full-scale war of jihad against Britain and the US.
I mean, I've not seen this guy for more than 12 years, Nick, and so yeah, I think, you know...
What
I'm
about
really,
Suleiman Ghani, a former imam at the Tooting Islamic Centre in Khan's constituency? On at least 9 occasions, you've shared a platform with him. He, of course, has called for an Islamic State.
That is Sadiq Khan, who got quite a grilling on British television. I believe that was this morning or maybe yesterday. Mr. Khan he's had a pretty successful career in the Labour Party. He's in the Labour Party, having been elected to Parliament in 2005. And now he's running for London mayor, or to be the mayor of London. And if the polls are correct, I think the vote is tomorrow, that man you heard there will be the next mayor of London. The Conservative home website goes through quite a few concerns about this possible mayor. His defense of one of the 9/11 terrorists. His defense of, well, quite a few. As you heard there in the exchange, he shared the platform with someone who's been an enthusiastic supporter of ISIS, the Islamic State. Not one time or two times or inadvertently doing it once or twice, but 9 times on the same stage. Prime Minister Cameron brought this up in a recent debate in Parliament. Here's a bit from that exchange.
And I have to say, I am concerned about Labour's candidate as Mayor of London, who has appeared again and again and again. The leader of the Labour Party, is saying it's disgraceful. Let me tell him. Right, so, Suleiman Ghani, the honourable member for Tooting, has appeared on a platform with him 9 times. This man supports IS. He even shared a platform. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think they are shouting down this point because they don't want to hear the truth. Anyone can make a mistake about who they appear on a platform with. We're not always responsible for what our political opponents say. But if you do it time after time after time, it is right to question your judgment.
But quite a few people in London feel like electing this Muslim mayor is the right way to go. A potential mayor who supports 9/11 terrorists and who's been endorsed by all kinds of anti-Semites. If you've followed it much, the Labour Party over here in the UK it's in the midst of an anti-Semitism scandal right now. Quite a few articles in the Telegraph and elsewhere, even in the States, there've been a few pieces as well. Particularly with the infamous interview that Ken Livingstone had recently. He made these remarks. Well, I'll let you hear it. He's basically defending someone who on Facebook, I believe it was, made some remarks that were apologized for. But here's Ken Livingstone, who used to be the mayor of London, defending that individual. This is clip 4.
Ken Livingstone, who said Naz Shah's comments were not anti-Semitic. Now, she's profusely apologised for them, said she made a mistake. If she's apologised for them, presumably she acknowledges that they were anti-Semitic. Do you still maintain they were not?
No, she's a deep critic of Israel and its policies. Her remarks were over the top. But she's not anti-Semitic. I've been in the Labour Party for 47 years. I've never heard anyone say anything anti-Semitic. I've heard a lot of criticism of the state of Israel and its abuse of the Palestinians, but I've never heard someone be anti-Semitic.
She talked about relocating Israel to America. She talked about what Hitler did being legal. And she talked about the Jews rallying, and she used the word Jews, not Israelis or Israel. You didn't find that to be anti-Semitic?
No, it's completely over the top. It's not anti-Semitic. I mean, let's remember, when Hitler won his election in 1932, his policy then was that Jews should be moved to Israel. He was supporting Zionism, and he went mad and ended up killing 6 million Jews. But the simple fact in all of this is that Naz made these comments at a time when there's another brutal Israeli attack on the Palestinians.
There's another example. You know, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Hitler, in case you didn't know, was a supporter of Zionism. I guess he was there campaigning for an Israeli state. And one of the Jews to have their own homeland. I mean, this is from the former mayor of London. And now we know about the future mayor that they might get tomorrow or Friday morning. This is London, the capital of Britain. Let me hear this woman posts these statements about, well, Israel should be relocated to the U.S., and she equates apartheid Israel, as she calls it, with Hitler's Germany. She apologizes, as you heard in the exchange there, and then the former mayor of London comes and defends her and says that, well, it wasn't anti-Semitic. It was just kind of over the top. And, oh, by the way, Hitler was a Zionist until he went mad and then decided, well, maybe I'll just kill 6 million of them instead. This is in Neil Ferguson's piece, which was posted at the Boston Globe. He said, I had assumed that anti-Semitism had no place in British life, aside from the odious antics of skinheads and other Neanderthal types on the fringes of the far right. There are, therefore, few things that depress me more than the resurfacing of anti-Semitism on the British left, and not on its fringes. This is not on the fringe. This is right in the heart of the Labour Party. It's the second largest party in the UK. He goes on, Ferguson does, to talk about this exchange with Ken Livingstone, the former mayor, who claimed that, quote, when Hitler won his election in 1932, his policy was that the Jews should be moved to Israel. He was supporting Zionism. This before he went mad and ended up killing 6 million Jews. Ferguson says, some Nazi officials did indeed favor immigration as the solution to the Jewish question, but for Livingstone, to claim that this was Hitler's preferred option is simply wrong. From as early as 1919, Hitler repeatedly stated that he saw the Jews as the racial tuberculosis of peoples. In a speech that he gave in April 1920, he called for them to be exterminated in Mein Kampf. I mean, the list goes on and on. The facts, in other words, of history, recent history, in Mein Kampf. He wrote, if at the beginning of the First World War and during the war, or 15,000 of these Hebrew corruptors of the people had been held under poison gas, the sacrifice of millions at the front would not have been in vain. Ferguson says, Germans who voted National Socialist in 1932 and 33 were not voting for a Zionist resettlement program. That's for sure. Now, these are the facts. And yet, look at how many of our leaders today, look at how childish their reasoning is. It's worse than childish. There's a spirit behind it. Ferguson says, last week's controversy is, of course, not really about the history of the 1930s, but about the much more recent history of the British Labour Party. Yes, indeed. What is happening to the British Labour Party? What's happening? Why is it swinging so radically to the left? Ferguson says Livingstone and Corbyn are no longer the devious entryists of their earlier militant years. Rather, they have become the useful idiots of an entirely new generation of labor infiltrators. It's just like it is in the United States. Last week, I believe it was, we talked about that 2006 article my father wrote about what the radical swing to the left means for our nations. Finally here, it says, it's not that Naz Shah is herself an Islamist. If she were, I doubt she would appear with her head uncovered in the House of Commons. It is just that bashing Israel appears to be an effective way of mobilizing Muslim voters who account for roughly half the electorate in Bradford West. Nor is Bradford the only place in Britain where this goes on. Nope, not the only place. It's even happening in London. What is happening to the nations, the descendants of Israel, the United States, and Britain? Well, I see on the clock we are fast running out of time. I have a few other news items here I'd like to get to. Hopefully I can get to them tomorrow. In any event, that's all that we have time for here today. Another packed show comes to an end. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. Don't forget to send us your emails. Send them to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.